session number 30617.
Mr. John Morton, Real 3. Now, we're talking about your time at number 12, Initial Training Wing at St. Andrews. Did you do any gunnery training there at all? I know you're pilot, navigator, bomb aimer, but I just wonder whether you had to learn any gunnery while you were at it.
Oh, we did not actual. Hold on, yeah. I was, again, being a good shot, we did clay pigeon shooting.
Now, tell me about that, because people don't. I didn't know about this till a year ago. Yeah. Why did you tell me about clay pigeon shooting?
So I was selected to go on this clay pigeon, and that's right, I'd forgotten about that. So there we'd go out there, and of course, to me, this was great. This was a rich man's hobby to do these sort of things. And we used to go out, and they'd have various points in a circular fashion that you go to, and then there was a launching point where they had a mechanical sling device, and you'd get set at one particular point, say quarter to, 10 to, 12, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, and as you stood round there, there'd be a command, fire, something like that, and this chappie in this hut would fling these clay pigeons, which was a clay disc, and these would go spinning into the air, and all depending on the angle that you were to the firing point, you would either have to fire ahead, beneath, or general, get a good idea of the trajectory of the clay pigeon.
So it's deflection shooting, isn't it? It's shooting ahead of where it would be.
Exactly. And this was done with, of course, with a double barrel gun, with shot. And this I enjoyed, and it's rather good fun, really.
Did you do any machine gun work, you know, or at all, or any other shooting, or was it just a clay pigeon?
Not at that point, no, I didn't do anything like that.
So anything else at number 12?
Yes, dinghy drill. We did dinghy drill in the open air pool.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, dinghy drill was generally how to inflate the dinghy, be able to get into the dinghy, which wasn't as easy as you think, really, and that was a general thing, really, to understand how to get into. In the main, we just had the with the single man dinghies at St. Andrews. So that was another good thing.
Anything else?
They'd have us jumping in up from heights into the water and this sort of thing. We didn't do any parachute stuff there, no. So that was it in general.
And you were there? You were there out for, well, three months.
Oh, yeah, it's quite a intensive course there.
And you passed all the tests. Were there a series of tests at the end?
Absolutely, yeah. Wherever you went, they were testing you. And
was it continuous assessment or a big exam at the end, or
no,
both?
No, invariably there'd be tests at periods of time. And I reckon that from the start I tried to work out how many chaps had disappeared, because this was going on all the time progressively, and you're wondering, oh, am I going to be next? Like, oh no, they didn't. If they felt there was no progress, you were out. That's the way I saw it.
Now, you left in September 43.
Yeah.
And then you seem to go to number one, Elementary Flying Training School. Now, it doesn't say where that is.
No, it isn't number one, is it? It would be either...
Number 11. Sorry, I do apologise.
Number 11, yeah.
Now, where's that at? Do you remember?
That was at Scoon.
Scoon?
Yes.
How do you spell that? Sorry.
S-C-O-N-E. That's the Scottish.
And whereabouts is that?
That's near Perth, or Perth.
Now, what happened there? This is where you do the flying part.
This is where you do the flying now, yeah.
And could you tell me about the setup at number 11 elementary?
Yeah, Bible? Well, the setup there was that I was billeted in rather a wonderful family home there by the, I think they called it the North or South Inch in Perth, and this home belonged to the Puller family, and they'd had to evacuate and make room for us, and it was all rather nice, although it's quite sparsely furnished. The floors were all parquet floors. We had to take off shoes and just go about in plimsolls in that place. So that was had a lower bedroom there, which I've been to see since, overlooking the Inch and watch the salmon flying there. So we were billeted there, and then a gharry would come in early hours of the morning, and I mean early, after breakfast, and then we'd be taken up through the mist to an airfield. It was a outside school, a place called Whitefield, I think it's called, but basically it was just a farmland that had been, they had all the necessary dispersal huts, the wind socks, etc. And so we used to motor out there, and then we'd be given the theory of how to fly the machines, and all the cockpit checks, and we already knew how the ailerons and so forth worked, and then we'd take off with an instructor. And
now, how did you, this is in what sort of aircraft? Tiger Moths, or
the Tiger Moth? The
now, did you do a familiarisation flight first, you know, just to get used?
Oh, absolutely.
And that would be your first flight, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. Yeah.
Now, what was the familiarisation flight like? I mean, what did they actually do? Did they fling you about, or did they just show you, you know, take
no,
your...
No, it's just circuits and bumps, really. They wouldn't try anything clever on you. It'd just get you seated. In that case, the instructor would take the front cockpit, and we'd be behind him, and everything was dual controlled. But of course, they didn't have any intercom in those days, other than through a speaking tube. And so after familiarisation, he then taught the various, taken through the motions of how to handle the aircraft, how to take off, how to...
Now, do you remember these things now? Because I know you didn't pursue flying.
No, I didn't, no.
So do you remember much about it?
Well, all I can remember is that after taxiing for takeoff, you know, you'd, you'd have to observe which way the wind was blowing, and you'd take off into wind, and then it's a question of open throttle, stick forward, up to airspeed, and stick back, and start to climb, and then start moving about the ailerons and turning, and then you'd go on then to what they call incipient spins, whereby you'd take the aircraft at a certain angle, they call a stall angle, until you feel it drop, and then you would dive down to take control again, and then we'd do full spins as well. But I never did anything in the way of loops or...
Didn't get that far?
No.
Now, so you how were you doing at flying? I mean, is this one of those jobs where you had 12 hours to go solo?
Yeah.
So how did it go for you?
Well, I thought I did quite reasonable well, but whereas some of the other chaps, they'd be doing solo after about 8 hours. I never went solo.
Now, so why not? What was your problem? Or what was their problem? You may not have considered it a problem.
Yeah, well, I think it was something that they decided. I was quite upset about it, so much so that I went to see my flying instructor. I said, well, I wanted to fly solo. And I think he appreciated me wanting to do it. He said, well, he gave me the impression, well, it wouldn't make any difference anyhow, you know. I think, in other words, I think that what I'd done at ITW, I think they'd already in their own mind had a good idea what they were going to do with me. I mean, that's only my way of thinking. Because
they were going to make you a navigator?
Yeah, I think so, because he just said, well, you know, it wouldn't make any difference. So I was glad I went forward, because at least I showed him I wasn't scared of having a go.
Do you think you were good enough?
Yeah, I thought I was, yeah. I was quite... I wanted... Like a lot of us, everybody wanted to be a pilot. So I took it to the full extent there in approaching him about it, and that was it. So I did the 12 hours, and I think he's a huge Australian chap, my instructor. And I think he was a bit frustrated in the job. You know, he'd obviously been on operations. He's a bit browned off with doing that job. Anyhow, that was it.
So you were only there a month, I think.
That's right.
You know, it's basically September to October.
Yeah.
And so that was it. You then knew you were training as a navigator.
I didn't know, no.
All right, so you still didn't know.
I don't know until I get back to Heaton Park,
What happened to Heaton Park? You go to Heaton Park you have leave first.
Yeah.
And then in November, you go to Heaton Park. Now, what's that about?
Yeah, well, this is the moment of truth there. So, this is where you're called into this big hangar there, or hall.
What is Heaton Park? It's just a camp, is it?
Yeah, well, it was... a dispersal unit, I suppose. What's it called there in the records? I don't know. Air crew.
Not very clear. Don't worry.
No.
So what happened to
air crew? Something. Center, isn't it?
Dispersal center.
It'll be there. That's it. So then he called in all of us all grouped together, and then they read out the various categories then, all the pilots, the navigators, the bomb aimers. So they'd gone through all these, and I'd realised I hadn't been selected for a pilot. So I thought, crikey, I'm going to be thrown out of this lot, you know. So anyhow, at the end, they come up with all these navigator wireless operators, which I'd never heard of before. I'd heard of wireless operator air gunners, but never heard of navigator wireless operators. So then these were read out then, and that's what they'd chosen to do for me, which of course lengthened my training by about another 12 months, as you will see.
So what happened then?
So then they send me then to Crack Number One Radio School in Cranwell.
Now, what happens at Number One Radio School?
Well, Number One Radio School...
What's the setup there?
Well, the setup there is, in terms of training, is that we were in barrack block accommodation there, not terribly comfortable.
What were the barrack blocks like?
Not very good.
Was it proper barracks or was it huts? Do you know the difference?
No, they were proper built... brick-built barracks type, H-shaped barracks, where you'd get along two lines of beds and ablutions at the far end, and with no hot water in there at all. It's pretty awful there. So that was the accommodation. As far as the flying's concerned, they take you on a familiarisation.
Now what in?
Flight in a de Havilland, some call it a Rapide, and others the Domini. I don't know what it's down in.
Well, Domini Rapide, yeah.
It's one of the same, anyhow. It's a rather light biplane, which... people used to say, if you're not sick in the Domini, you'll be all right in anything. So anyhow, that was just a listening exercise. Then you come down there, and then you start working on Morse code.
Now tell me about Morse code. How are you doing with Morse code? You've done well at the start, so
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Well, as I say, it just came quite... I never lost any sleep over it at all.
What speed were you required to get up to?
20 words a minute. And that's plain language. And the code, I think, was 18.
Now, what code were you learning? This is cipher code.
Cipher code, yeah.
So, how did it work?
Well, that was on a five-figure code business. I can't quite recall, other than how you work the code out now. But that's what it was based on.
Now, what other training were you doing? I mean, it's a navigator. Are you learning wireless operator here, or are you doing navigation?
No, purely whilst operating. So we're then do a lot of work in these cubicles and this sort of thing, and there you'd have one would take the part of one in the air, one on the ground, and him receiving messages, and generally progress in that respect. Then we go into the air, and now we're going to what they call a Percival Proctor now. which really wasn't geared up for all this heavy Marco. First of all, when I went there, we were, believe it or not, operating on crystal sets.
Now tell me about that first then.
Yeah, well, the crystal sets, they you had to get these crystals and plug them in, and apparently they were very expensive, so if you damaged anyone, they weren't very happy about that. But then they moved on to the Marconi, which I think it's the T1150 or something, an R11 something or other. And this is what they've installed in these Percival Proctors, which was a very light single engine monoplane, you know. And
so these are wireless exercises, or signals exercises?
Yeah, yeah.
And what do you remember of them in the Percival Proctor?
Well, all I remember it being very uncomfortable in that we were flying backwards, you know, so the pilot would be sat in his usual position and we would have the radio equipment, all this heavy stuff at the back, and we'd be facing towards the back of the aircraft. So in other words, it wasn't very comfortable, but on the other hand, it made you concentrate on the job that you were doing.
Now you were going on flight, the flight, so I'm looking at your thing. You start them you're in 44, March 44 for you start them.
Yeah.
But they're about an hour each, those flights.
Yeah,
you know, and they're just a series of exercises from to seven.
Do
you remember what any of them are? Or I mean, I don't expect you to particularly, but do you remember much? What kind of exercise were they?
Well, the thing is that you've got wet wafts on the ground, and you had to keep in contact with them, and giving out messages and receiving messages from them. And on the lighter side, there was one occasion where I'd received this message, and I recorded these da-di-di-das at the end, da-di-di-da, da-di-di-da. So when it came down off this flight for Mark, he said, hey, what's all this about? I said, I don't know. He said, well, she's sending you kisses over this Morse code. So that's what it was about, getting familiar, although you're up in the air, being in contact with somebody on the ground. And it's quite an experience, really. So
now you passed. Anything else you were doing at the school? You were there a long time.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to radio operating. You know, they teach you basics about radios in general, whether they be super sets, all about how diodes and all the things that go to taking in signals and.
Would you learn how to repair them? I mean, you know, so you were understanding how it worked inside the box. Could you repair them?
Well, you couldn't in the air, but the only thing you could do is if the generator stopped for some reason, I had a thing called, I used to call it a Marconi tap. I used to give it a kick and invariably it'd start up again. But you couldn't do any actual repairs in the air. It's too complex. But they gave you a good insight into radio circuits and how they generally worked, and all about carrier waves and modulated carrier waves, and why Morse travelled so much more distance than radio waves in those days, which of course doesn't apply today. And everything they did was, you got a
did you do voice procedure? I should have asked, or was it just Morse?
Well, in terms of voice procedure, the main thing was that we're never made to emulate the wonderful voices of the GPO. The thing we did was how to procedure in messages and this sort of thing, which was based on the GPO system in those days. So different procedures, how it had to be done in a certain way. But now, as far as voice modulation, it was a question of never let your voice drop. Keep it up all the time, even.
Were there set ways you meant to speak, or phonetic alphabets you had to use?
Oh, well, we had to do all that, yes. We did all the Abel Baker Charlie method, and then when we got halfway through the course, he used to say, "Well, chaps, I'm sorry about this, but we have to go over to the American phonetics now, so we're coming out with all this other stuff then." And also the procedure changed, so that was an added responsibility. But anyhow, you did it, and that was it.
Now, you were there till April 44, you know, so you're there 5 months at least.
Yeah.
And then you seem to go backward. You seem to go to Heaton, leave Heaton Park, yeah. Newquay, leave Heaton Park,
yeah.
Before you go to Canada. Yeah. Is there anything about those periods?
Yeah, it's very, very interesting, that, really, because I've not figured it out yet. When I came back from Cranwell, I thought, well, this is it. We'll be going out to Canada. But something was happening at Heaton Park then that I've never really got down to the bottom of. But I did realise that there was some unease going on there in terms of some of the qualified pilots that had come back from overseas, and some of the other air crews that were given, they must have been given some menial tasks, you know, to bide the time away, sending them out into Trafford Park. I do know that for a fact, you know, there'd be commissioned pilots working on the trains in Trafford Park, and some of them would go out to Heywood on, there was a big supplies place there at Heywood, and they'd be working out there. And I don't know really what happened, but there was certainly some disturbance going on, in that I'd heard that we were in some sort of a revolt, really. You know, they'd had enough of this, you know, and so that when I got there back again, they wanted to get us out of the way, really. So is it right that they send me down to Newquay then, for no other reason than to
now, what's at Newquay?
Well, Newquay was an ITW down there, but we were just there. And at this time it was rather interesting down there, because it was just before the invasion, and we get down to Newquay in this hotel there, and next door and all the way along the seafront there's all these Americans there, and there were absolutely thousands and thousands. I thought, well, what's going on here? And they were all displaying all the weaponry. They were very proud of all. They had automatic weapons there that we'd never even dreamed of or seen before. And of course, what they were really there for is the invasion, because I'm there about that time, aren't I?
You are, yes.
So all we were doing was just biding our time there, going to church parades, and I think they put me on attending a bit of a vegetable garden there, and generally sunbathing. It's just crazy. So I don't know how long I was there, but
You're there about a month, and then you're back to more leave.
Yeah,
2 weeks leave, which is you'd only just had over 2 weeks leave.
Yeah,
and then you're back to Heaton Park again for another 2 or 3 months. Yeah. Now, nothing much happening, I presume.
No.
Now, so the next thing then is the voyage out, and you go out. You're going to Canada.
Yes.
Now, what do you remember of the trip out?
Well, the trip out was from Liverpool to New York on the Mauritania.
Now, what do you remember about that trip?
Well, it's an interesting trip in that we had some German prisoners of war on board, and also quite a number of VIPs that were travelling back to the States. People like entertainers, the Massey family, they were there, they were on board.